You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in, everyone, to Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast coverage of the Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. Today's show is brought to you courtesy of our friends and partners over at SeatGeek. Download the SeatGeek mobile app and use the promo code LONBA, and you can get a $20 rebate off of your first SeatGeek purchase. So as we chat on this Saturday, there's no new movement on the Carmelo front. We will discuss that on the back half of the show in a few minutes. But in general, we're still in the waiting game that we've been in for, well, over 2 weeks now, since the Knicks 2 weeks from this past Thursday temporarily paused discussions in hopes of either getting a better deal, getting to Carmelo, and hoping that he expands his list, whatever rationalization you want to come up with. But right now, we're still in the same waiting game that we've been in ever since then. However, that doesn't mean the Rockets are just going to sit around and do nothing. They still have to finalize their roster, because regardless of whether it's Carmelo Anthony or Ryan Anderson at the four spot, there's still an entire team to build around them, and in a season they hope to potentially be the second best team in the NBA and hopefully give the Golden State Warriors a run come playoff time. That means that regardless of which of those two guys is your starting power forward, there's still a roster to build around them. And the latest step in that process was agreed to on Friday, first reported by Mike Scotto of Basketball Insiders. The Rockets have agreed to a deal with Demetrius Jackson, formerly of Notre Dame, spent his first year with the Boston Celtics and their D-League team in Maine. But he's a guard, and the Rockets have agreed to a deal with Jackson for a two-way roster spot. It's a new thing in the NBA for this season. It essentially allows them to shuttle him back and forth between the D-League affiliate. For the Rockets, of course, that's Rio Grande Valley and Houston. But the important thing about it, the two-way roster spots, they don't count against the salary cap, which is big for the Rockets because they're up against a hard cap, and they're going to add a lot more salary if and when they deal for Carmelo Anthony, so it doesn't count against the salary cap, and it gives them two extra roster spots. That's a big deal because in the past you can only have 15 players and, of course, only 12 active, and so even though you can have 20 players in the offseason, you eventually have to cut at least five of them to get down to the 15 during the season. Well, these new two-way roster spots essentially allow you to hold up to 17 players, and they're especially valuable when you're a team like the Rockets that's up against the hard cap that doesn't have a ton of money. Essentially, it's a way to kind of get yourself some extra depth and protect yourself so that if injuries do occur and you find yourself needing more depth than just the 12 to 15 players, then it's a way that the Rockets can have a pipeline built up without having to commit salary cap money over the short term. So it's a pretty good deal for that. Nothing to lose, really. And when you look at the two-way contracts, that's why they're extremely team-friendly. There are a lot of players, or I shouldn't say players, there are a lot of agents around the league who are not big fans of the two-way contracts because they are very team-friendly. They restrict movement for the player. Essentially, the player isn't getting a full-time NBA salary, not even an NBA minimum salary full-time. And so there are a lot of agents that would rather them either play in the D-League, play internationally, but be uncommitted. In other words, allow them to play well and then sign wherever there's first a vacancy at their position around the league. Whereas the two-way contracts, they give them a little more money than just a typical untethered D-League contract, but it ties them to that one team. So in essence, it's very team-friendly, and you haven't seen that many guys sign them, and I think a big part of that is because you need a high degree of trust that you like the organization, you think the organization is going to treat you fairly, and thankfully, led by Daryl Morey, the Rockets have a good reputation around the league, particularly with the agent community, and so I think that's why Demetrius Jackson was willing to take a leap of faith on the Houston Rockets. Now, the good news about this, in my opinion, is that Demetrius Jackson can play. This is a guy who was a second-round pick a year ago in the 2016 draft, and the Celtics actually signed him to a four-year deal. They liked him a lot, and he played well at the D-League last year, 15 points, 6 assists per game. Unfortunately, got caught in a numbers game, both in terms of the roster and salary clearing, as the Celtics had to get under the cap to sign Gordon Hayward, their big offseason acquisition. So essentially, his four-year deal was kind of caught in a numbers game. It was only partially guaranteed after the first year. So he was just one of those casualties that you have to make when you're trying to get under the cap. We've seen it with the Rockets just a few years back, all the moves they had to make to get Dwight Howard back in 2013. So you can occasionally get some good signings with a dynamic like that. He didn't get to play as much in the summer league because they weren't sure of what his status was. So maybe he flew under the radar a little bit. But this is a guy who, again, a mid-second round draft pick, I believe 46th in the 2016 draft. And some folks actually had him as a fringe first round candidate in the 2016 draft. The thing about Demetrius Jackson, he's 6'1", but he can score. He can fill it up. He is an elite shot creator. If you've watched Notre Dame basketball over the last few years, they typically have a lot of guards who do the heavy lifting on the perimeter, and so that makes them not just excel as shooters, but also as creators. And to me, when I watched Demetrius Jackson at Notre Dame, he actually reminded me a lot of maybe a poor man's Aaron Brooks. Now, he's still got to develop his shot more, but if he can continue to build on his shooting, and that's something the Rockets are known for in Houston and at the D-League level. They work a lot on the mechanics of these players and their releases. If he further develops his shot, he can be a big-time instant offense player off the bench. Now, the weakness, he's 6'1", and his main attributes are his shooting and his shot creation ability. He's only an average facilitator at best, and so that's why he wasn't a high NBA pick, because essentially at 6'1", he has to play a point guard. He's not big enough to be, you know, a 2/3, a true wing in the NBA. He has to be a point guard, but he doesn't really have point guard skills. He's more of a shooting guard in a point guard's body. So there is a ceiling for guys like that. However, off the bench, yeah, you can absolutely work with that. And of course, in the right settings, we saw that with Aaron Brooks in Houston. If you work on the facilitating, get it to just a passable level, and of course, continue to build upon the strength that he already has in terms of his shooting and shot creating, then yeah, there's no reason why Demetrius Jackson can't be a contributor at the NBA level. The ceiling might be a little limited based on his lack of true facilitating skills, but there's definitely a base to work with when you have a guy who's 6'1", very quick, great shot creator, can shoot. It's a nice signing. You can get that on a two-way contract, not even counting against your salary cap. So it's a shrewd move by Daryl Morey, and it's at a position where they needed it. Because for the Rockets this offseason, they've been in a weird place when it comes to the guard spots. And that, well, we know they're kind of, their resources are limited in general because of the hard cap and because of the moves they've made thus far. But they were able to add depth to the forward spots in the center because you can see a path to minutes, at least some minutes. For example, they got Tarik Black for the biannual exception. Well, in addition to the money, a big part of why they were able to get Black is because behind Nene, who's your backup center, you know Nene's probably going to rest at least 20 games during the season, and there are other matchups that might not be conducive to Nene at 35 years old. So even though he's third string, you can see a path to minutes. And then Luke Baamute, they signed for the minimum, an amazing signing at the forward spots. Yes, there are other forwards, Ariza, PJ Tucker, either Ryan Anderson or Carmelo, but most of the guys are in their 30s. None are that well entrenched. So even though there are three existing forwards, there is a path to minutes. Whereas with the guards, it's tough because, yes, there's only three guards, but those three guards are insanely good when you talk about Chris Paul, James Harden, and Eric Gordon. So even though there's just three guards, you cannot guarantee minutes to anyone at the guard spots because those 96 minutes every game are spoken for. Well, every game that the Rockets are playing all out. Now, of course, we do know that the Rockets are probably going to have more maintenance games than they've had in the past. And when I say maintenance games, I mean rest for the purposes of making it through an 82-game season and being in peak condition for the playoffs. I think Chris Paul, at 32 years old, he's certainly a maintenance game candidate. I don't think you're counting on him to play 80 games. And I think after what we saw from James Harden in the playoffs last year, in terms of fatigue possibly being an issue, I think they're open to at least 4 or 5 maintenance games for James Harden over the course of the season as well. So because of that, the Rockets are in a unique spot where they'd probably like to have more depth at the guard spots. You can throw Eric Gordon in there too, because Gordon throughout his career has had injury issues, and we saw last year, the first 40 games, Eric Gordon was fantastic when he was fresh. The last 40, he was very hit or miss, in large part because he went through a stretch of injuries in January and February and never seemed to be quite the same after that. So the Rockets are in a tough spot where they can't really offer guaranteed minutes because everyone in the world knows how entrenched those three guards are. However, at the same time, you probably need more depth because of the maintenance those guys are going to need over 82 games. So it's tough to find a fit in those dynamics. Now, they did get Bobby Brown back, and I said Bobby, you know, in his mid-30s, that's a good fit because he's the type of guy who's not going to go in necessarily expecting minutes per per se, so it's easier for him to stay on the bench, and when he's ready and his number gets called, to step in and play well. But of course, you'd like to have some younger options as well. It's just tough to get younger options to consider Houston in the circumstances, because it's just impossible to fathom a scenario where you can beat those any of those three guys out for minutes. But Demetrius Jackson, he's a casualty of a weird situation in Boston. He didn't get to play as much in the summer league, so I think his value might be artificially low. And so Daryl Morey saw it as an opportunity, and now they've got a guy who played relatively well in the D-League last year. He got a lot of time with a very good organization in Boston in the Eastern Conference Finals. So you know Boston, coached by Brad Stevens, makes defense a high priority. So in addition to his obvious attributes on the ball, I think defensively he's been coached well in Boston. That's a good system. Also, Mike Bray at Notre Dame, I think they prioritize on-ball defense a lot. I think there's some benefits in the synergies between Notre Dame's basically one big four-out system and then the way the Rockets typically play small ball in Houston. I think that's especially going to be the case this year, of course, with Chris Paul and James Harden. Notre Dame typically just has one big on the floor, and so what that does, it puts a ton of pressure on those guards, not just offensively, but defensively as well, to excel in that four-out offense. And so that's something that, between the coaching that Jackson got in Boston, led by Brad Stevens, the development they put on defense there, and then the responsibilities he was given in that small ball system at Notre Dame, I think that makes him a really good system fit for the Rockets, and at a position where, yeah, the Rockets would love to have more guard depth. It's just tough to acquire guard depth between the fact that the Rockets don't have that many resources to begin with financially, and then the roster spots, or at least the roster minutes, I should say, are so completely spoken for when everybody's healthy by Chris Paul, James Harden, and Eric Gordon. So it takes a little bit of luck to bolster that guard pipeline beyond the likes of Bobby Brown, but I think the Rockets struck at the right time and got a really good deal with the signing of Demetrius Jackson to a two-way contract. So it's a little move. I think clearly he's going to spend more time at the D-League than in Houston. That's why it's a two-way contract. Essentially, I believe they're maxed out at 45 days at the NBA level. Before at that point, you would need to give them a full-time, basically a regular minimum contract that would count against your salary cap. So I think primarily they're looking at Jackson as a developmental guy at the D-League level. But at the same time, he's got real upside. Again, his shooting, his playmaking, well, I shouldn't say his playmaking because I don't want to give the impression he's a great facilitator. I should say his shooting and his shot creation are good enough skills to where people thought he was a fringe first-round candidate in the 2016 draft, and the Celtics liked him enough to give him a four-year deal. So this is a guy who has some real skills, and you have to look out for the right situations to get someone like that to Houston with the limitations the Rockets have right now. But they were able to do it, and it bolsters that guard pipeline. And while he's not a guy who's going to start out in your rotation or even in Houston, barring some sort of catastrophic injury to start this coming season, at the same time, it is a guy who could really help your depth, especially if you end up losing Isaiah Taylor, which I think there's a decent shot that you probably lose Isaiah Taylor in a Carmelo trade just because of the fact that he's one of your only young assets, the fact that the Rockets do have an issue with the hard cap. I think they could make a trade for Carmelo work without Isaiah Taylor, but then you have issues in terms of keeping him anyway, so he might be a guy that you throw in because, A, the other teams want young players with upside if they can get it, and, B, it might be very difficult to guarantee his salary once Carmelo pushes your salary up, as your team salary up, by $6 or $7 million. So for a lot of reasons, the Rockets could use more guard depth in the pipeline, and I think Demetrius Jackson does that, and it strikes me as a quintessential buy low signing by Daryl Morey. He took advantage of a unique situation, and I think the Rockets are going to reap the rewards for it as they go through the next year or two. Because, as I've said from the outset, that's one thing you should never worry about with Daryl Morey, which is bolstering your depth. That's something that, in terms of acquiring rotation level players on the cheap, he is as good as anyone in the NBA, probably better at doing that. So that's why, even though they traded out a lot of assets in the Chris Paul trade, it was never something that really made me sweat, because the hard part of the job is acquiring the top end talent like Chris Paul and what we hope maybe Carmelo Anthony could be in the system. That's the hard part in terms of filling out a rotation and finding capable rotation quality players on the cheap. Daryl Morey is as good as it gets on that. So that was never something that, in my opinion, Rockets fans should worry about. Now, I'm going to get back to the bigger picture stuff, which, of course, is Carmelo Anthony in just a minute. But for now, I do want to pause and acknowledge our wonderful sponsors over at SeatGeek, because without their support, we would not be able to bring this program to you as frequently as we do. And SeatGeek, of course, we use them a lot in season. They're especially valid for this upcoming Rockets season with Chris Paul, James Harden. You know the Rockets are going to be a tough ticket. But they're a big resource out of season as well, because entertainment, you guys want to go to concerts over the summer, or if you want to catch up on the Astros, the best team in baseball, well, folks, SeatGeek is the best place to go. They've come along, they've created an amazing app, and the best thing for me, I've got it on my phone, that app is just so seamless. You can literally buy and sell tickets in just two taps, and in addition to that, they give you the best tickets at the best prices. They cross-compare the various websites, so you know you're getting the best deals, and they also grade every ticket from 1 to 100 so that you know you're getting the best bang for your buck. So if you want to go check out the Astros or any concert and know that you're getting the best deal, go to the SeatGeek app. You're going to get the best prices. You're guaranteed from a security standpoint. All the tickets are legitimate. And the best part of this, as my listeners here at Locked On Rockets, y'all all get a $20 rebate off of your first purchase. And to get it, it's just so easy. To do it, download the mobile app, go to the settings tab and click add a promo code, then enter the promo code LONBA. From there, you should get $20 off of your first SeatGeek purchase. Again, that new promo code is LONBA. I think my favorite part of it, and it's going to be especially useful for this coming Rocket season, is just avoiding the issues with dynamic pricing. It infuriates me so much when you see these ridiculously inflated rates for the Astros, especially on weekend games, relative to the season ticket holders who get to buy them at such a lower rate, a more traditional rate that all of us are used to. But where these secondary market sites come in, they allow you to get in at that lower price because a lot of them are being sold by season ticket holders. So essentially, it lets you beat the system. And among those secondary market sites, to me, SeatGeek, especially with that mobile app, it's just so friendly. And it's my preferred place for pretty much everything, basketball, baseball, but also the entertainment world, concerts, you name it, they've got it. So also speaking of you name it, they've got it, you can also pretty much say that about the existing Houston Rockets roster, which, as I've said to this point, is clearly the second best team in the NBA behind just the Golden State Warriors. On paper, I think they have everything you could want, and if not for the Warriors, I think in most years in NBA history, this would be about as good of a roster as there is. The one weakness, if you can find one right now, I think you'd want more playmaking, shot creation ability in the front court. I think, obviously, Chris Paul and James Harden in the backcourt, you're feeling ecstatic there. But at the forward spots right now, Ariza and Ryan Anderson, I think you would rather get a little more playmaking and shot creation there if you want to keep up with a team like the Warriors that has four all-star level players and, well, two MVPs. And, of course, the most reasonable avenue for the Rockets to upgrade at that spot would be for Carmelo Anthony. And as I've said leading off, I'm not going to fill you guys full of fake rumors, because reality is, outside of a few random people on the internet, and from what I've seen, they don't exactly seem very credible, I think we're still where we always were on the Carmelo rumors, which is waiting for the Knicks to come back to the table. And ultimately, I think they will. But for now, I'm not going to talk too much about the rumors, because I'm not convinced that anything has changed in the past couple of weeks. What I do want to discuss on the Carmelo front is to push back against some of the lazy narratives I've seen developing on Twitter the last couple of days, which a lot of them originating from New York, about Carmelo somehow being a bad guy for this elongated process, or the idea that the Knicks should just keep him and that they have nothing to lose. I think a lot of those are fan-driven reactions. They aren't necessarily representative of the New York front office. But I think we all know, especially with Twitter, sometimes these narratives can take hold. And so while there's not any new news, I do want to push back against some of the silliness we've seen the past couple of days. And of course, a lot of it originates from the Kyrie Irving trade talks from Cleveland, because we've heard initially that the Knicks were one of four teams that he wanted to go to, and then there was a new report from ESPN's Pablo Torre this week that he really, really wanted to go to the Knicks. And, of course, a lot of folks say, okay, well, why not trade Carmelo for him? And before they even get to the reality, which is that, of course, that deal is terrible for Cleveland, then people say, well, Carmelo won't go there because he only wants Houston. And so now people have essentially made Carmelo into the bad guy, and that's made hard feelings for Melo in New York even harder. And this is so ridiculous on a number of levels. First off, what Kyrie wants is irrelevant. This is what happens when you sign a contract, most contracts, Carmelo being an exception because of the no-trade clause. If you are 2 years or more removed. He's 2 years removed before he can even think about leaving, and because he has a player option for the third and final year of his existing contract, referring to Kyrie Irving. So what Kyrie wants is irrelevant. It's kind of reminiscent of the Kyrie New York stuff of Dwight Howard in Brooklyn a few years ago. If you remember back in 2012, Brooklyn was at the top of Dwight Howard's wish list, and everyone ran with that story, except Brooklyn had no assets at all. Now, of course, the Knicks do have one asset that would make sense for Cleveland, which is Kristaps Porzingis, but apparently they're unwilling to trade that. And of course, you understand it, because if they trade Porzingis for Kyrie, it's almost like you're spinning your wheels in terms of building something for the future. But outside of Porzingis, there just aren't really the assets there. And for Cleveland, that matters, because again, Kyrie has no trade clause. He signed his future to the Cavaliers when he signed that 5-year deal. If Kyrie wanted his options, and this is where I get so annoyed with a lot of NBA fans on Twitter. If he wants his options, just sign 1 or 2 year deals, the same way LeBron James and Kevin Durant does. If you sign a 5-year deal, there are consequences that come with that, which is that you are essentially putting your fate in the organization's hand. You are fully committing to them. So no, I don't feel sorry for Kyrie because he wants out or he wants certain teams. No, if he wanted full flexibility, he could have signed 1 or 2 year deals. There's nothing stopping him from doing that. He signed a multi-year contract, which means his fate is in Cleveland's hands, and the Cavs are under no responsibility whatsoever to trade him to someone on his list. They have to do what's best for them as an organization. And of course, that gets into the second point, which is that outside of Porzingis, the Knicks don't really have a package that makes sense. I've discussed this at length on prior Locked On Rockets episodes, so I don't want to go that deep into it here. But folks, trading Kyrie Irving at 25 years old, signed for at least 2 more years in the prime of his career, for a package headlined by a 33-year-old Carmelo Anthony who's declined significantly in terms of his efficiency, his athleticism the last couple of years, that's absolutely silly. That was never going to happen. And the annoying part about it is that because of Carmelo's no trade, a lot of folks aren't even allowing themselves to go there. When I say a lot of folks, I mean folks on Twitter who essentially just want to have a hot take, or the shows like First Take, Undisputed, you know, the debate nonsense crap that's on TV a lot of times during the day. They don't even get to that because it's easier to have one singular person to blame than look at the complex issue. The complex issue, of course, being that Cleveland has full control over Kyrie, and a deal headlined by Carmelo doesn't really make any sense for them. But it's easier just to make someone the enemy, and that's what it seems like a lot of folks have done with Carmelo. And it doesn't even make sense, because even if Carmelo was willing to waive his no-trade clause and go to Cleveland, I feel pretty confident that Cleveland would still not be pursuing that deal, because it makes no sense for that to be the headliner of Kyrie Irving. Again, Kyrie Irving is more important to the Cavaliers than Kevin Love, and the Cavaliers resisted for months, maybe years, overtures from the Knicks to trade Carmelo Anthony for Kevin Love. So if they wouldn't do it with Kevin Love, why in the world would they do it with Kyrie Irving? The facts are, Carmelo is desired by the Rockets because, even considering his flaws and the declines in his games, on a one-for-one upgrade to the rotation relative to Ryan Anderson, then yeah, he makes a lot of sense. But in terms of being the focal point for a team to build around, no, he doesn't. And that's why it just doesn't make any sense for the Cavs at all. We had a report from Adrian Wojnarowski yesterday that it seemed like the offer from Miami for Kyrie Irving, which was headlined by Goran Dragic and Justice Winslow, probably was not going to be enough. Well, folks, Goran Dragic is a better basketball player right now than Carmelo Anthony, and he plays a better fit for the Cavaliers in terms of their roster as a guard. And Justice Winslow, of course, is, even with his offensive weaknesses that he's shown thus far in the NBA, he's still probably a better prospect than anyone the Knicks have other than Porzingis. So if you really want to blame someone, you should actually probably blame the Knicks as an organization for, outside of Porzingis, having no real assets that anyone wants, so that even if Kyrie wants to go to New York, fact is they can't put together a competitive offer. So if you really want to blame somebody, I would say blame the Knicks' mismanagement over the years. But instead, we all know that Carmelo only wants to go to Houston. Everybody knows his preference, and Carmelo is a popular whipping boy. I don't know if he's a popular whipping boy nationally, but he's certainly a whipping boy in New York. That's what Phil Jackson has made him into for years, and of course, a lot of the media is built in New York, so that kind of feeds off itself, and it's just easier to blame Carmelo for being rude. And by the way, Carmelo, it's not being rude. Carmelo has no incentive to help the Knicks. That's why you don't give players no trade clauses. But in reality, it's not Carmelo's fault. Carmelo could come out today and say, yeah, I'm willing to go to Cleveland, and it still doesn't change the dynamics one bit in terms of the Kyrie Irving sweepstakes, because the reason that the Knicks are not getting Kyrie Irving isn't because of Carmelo Anthony, it's not because he's a bad guy, it's not because he's being unreasonable, It's because the Knicks just don't have the assets to make that work unless they give up Porzingis. So it's just silly to see a lot of fans turning on Carmelo and essentially with a lot of the fans, I'm confident that not even the Knicks front office is that petty, but a lot of the fans seem to be less willing to work a deal for Carmelo than ever before based on the perceived hostility. And folks, Carmelo's hostility, whether it exists or not, that's not why the Knicks are not getting Kyrie Irving. That's just ridiculous. And so we need to push back against that narrative, which is that, yeah, Carmelo is not what's standing between Kyrie and New York. A lack of assets outside of Porzingis, that's what's standing between Kyrie Irving and New York. So this doesn't need to be some sort of bitter situation where the Knicks fans or people around the NBA view Carmelo as blocking Kyrie to the Knicks, because that could not be further from the truth. The other part of this, of course, is lingering bitterness over the no-trade clause. And folks, this is why, as I said a moment ago, you don't give no-trade clauses. Aside from Carmelo, I think the only two players in the league that have no-trade clauses are LeBron James and Dirk Nowitzki. LeBron being arguably the greatest player in the history of the sport, and Dirk, a franchise icon in Dallas who's never going anywhere. Essentially, those are token gestures. You only give a no-trade clause if you never plan to move the guy, because it gives the player all the power. What do you think anyone would do if they had a no-trade clause? I don't think players like being moved as much as they are, as much as we love talking about the hot stove league. Yeah, it takes a lot to uproot someone's life, you know, and these players, you know, they are people. And so you move them to a new city, a new organization where they're starting over. I don't think they like that. Of course, it comes with the territory, and I think, you know, they're compensated well enough to where they generally accept it. But folks, if a lot of these players had no trade clauses, a lot of trades would not be happening. It's not that they don't like where they're going. It's just no one likes to move for the sake of moving. And a lot of these guys are comfortable where they are. And so if you give a player a no trade clause, well, essentially you're giving him all the power. So if you're upset about Carmelo exerting so much leverage, then really you should blame Phil Jackson, not Carmelo Anthony, because it was ridiculous to give him a no-trade in the first place. There are plenty of stars, even older eligible stars around the league, who don't get the no-trade because it is so restrictive. And the thing about Carmelo Anthony, even when he was at his peak, he was a very, very good player. I don't know if I would ever consider him a top five in the league player. He was never a guy where you say, wow, this guy is one of the true all-time greats. He was never at that LeBron James level. So because of that, unless you're talking about a player like LeBron, who by himself makes you a contender, or in the case of Dallas and Dirk Nowitzki, someone who's such a franchise icon that you know that you are never going to let him leave, unless it's something like that, then you should never, ever give the no-trade clause, because you never know what's going to come up. In the case of Carmelo, he's a perfectly fine player, even now having declined a little bit. But the Knicks have been spinning their wheels for a while in terms of their rebuilding process, so it makes sense for them to move on. And even back in 2014, when he signed that contract, this was incredibly foreseeable that towards the latter part of this deal, that the Knicks moving him for younger assets might be a better play for both sides, both for the Knicks organization trying to rebuild and Carmelo trying to get to a contender. So this should have been extremely foreseeable 3 years ago not to give him a no-trade clause, yet that's exactly what Phil Jackson did, and Carmelo is using his leverage. So it's just ridiculous to make Carmelo into a bad guy because he's using his no-trade clause to the fullest extent. This is why most players don't have no-trade clauses. Carmelo's no different than anybody else. I feel pretty confident that if you gave a no-trade clause to most NBA players, then they would zero in on the destination that they want to go and say, hey, I'm comfortable where I am, especially if they like the city, which clearly Carmelo does. He's got his family there. He has a ton of off-court ventures in New York, and he's comfortable saying, hey, I like living here, and either I'm going to stay here and be comfortable off the court, or you're going to send me where I want to go. And that's what a full no-trade clause does, and that's why most NBA teams don't give them out. So Carmelo is not being a bad guy for using the leverage. What you should be upset about if you're a Knicks fan is Phil Jackson for giving that no-trade clause in the first place. So that's another example of basically, I don't want to put it all on Knicks fans because to some extent it's the organization too, but everyone is making Carmelo Anthony the boogeyman, and there have been a lot of mistakes that Carmelo had nothing to do with, but he's an easy target. He's the star of a team that's underachieved in the NBA's biggest market, and everyone just piles onto him. The reality, he's not a bad guy. He is not holding you hostage or anything like that. And, well, even if you feel like he is, then it's the team's fault, not Carmelo, because most players in the NBA, I feel pretty confident in saying, would do the same thing if they had the opportunity. The only difference is they don't have the opportunity. And the final aspect of this that I want to push back against, now that there's no real rumors to discuss because they're kind of in a holding pattern waiting for the Knicks to go back to the table, there's been a lot of bitterness built up amongst Knicks fans and even a few in the national media against Carmelo for not opening up his list to teams like Cleveland or even Oklahoma City or Portland. And so you're seeing a building sentiment of, well, if he can't let us get a better deal, then just let him rot. We're not going to work with him to send him to Houston. And the logic is very misguided for a lot of reasons. First off, Carmelo's not the bad guy that you're making him out to be for the reasons I just explained. But secondly, what Knicks fans don't seem to understand, there are a lot of folks that say, well, you keep him and he just rolls off the cap next summer. No, he does not. The Knicks have things to lose because Carmelo Anthony, he is not just owed 1 year at $26 million. He is owed 2 years at $54 million. And if you've been paying attention to the free agent contracts this summer, you know they have been surprisingly low. And next year, it's not really going to be different because the cap is basically flattening out. We're going to have about the same cap next year that we do this year. So the era of rich salaries, everyone exploding, what we saw in 2016 with those skyrocketing salaries, that's over. We are in an era in which teams are being very responsible and thrifty with their spending. And next summer, at 34 years old, I would be stunned if Carmelo Anthony had a better financial package than 1 year, $28 million. Even if he were willing to sign a two-year deal, I don't know if he could get 2 years for $28 million in this environment. This is a guy who will be 34 years old. His defense has slipped. His athleticism clearly has. His player efficiency rating was below 18 last year. This is not the star Carmelo Anthony from a few years ago. I don't know if he could even get two for 28, let alone one for 28. So I think the clear play for Carmelo Anthony is to opt in. Now, in certain extreme circumstances, like if there's a banana boat scenario, if LeBron James coming to Houston, yeah, he might opt out and take a little bit of less money to facilitate that. But unless it's some sort of crazy perfect storm like that, otherwise what makes sense for Carmelo is to opt in. And I think he's made it pretty clear for folks saying, well, he'll opt in, but why would he do that? Because he's uncomfortable in New York. No, he's not uncomfortable. The whole reason we're in this mess, for years the Knicks have been open to moving him. It's Carmelo that has not been open to moving and is now only open to doing so for a very specific circumstance, meaning Houston. He's comfortable in New York. His family is there, including his son. He likes his off-court life there, where he lives, his business ventures. Carmelo is perfectly happy staying in New York. So this idea that, well, because of all this, he's going to opt out and the Knicks are just going to have this windfall of cap savings. No, Carmelo makes sense in Houston because one for one, he's an upgrade on Ryan Anderson. But big picture, he's still not a good value on that contract at all. 2 years, $54 billion for a 33-year-old Carmelo Anthony. That's not good. It's just Houston, because Houston is a finished product, can afford to pay that because they feel like the team is good enough that they're not going to need further upgrades. On the other hand, a rebuilding team like New York, no, that's not good. And that's not even going into any potential chemistry effects from an unhappy Carmelo sticking around in New York. This is just a baseline look at the finances of it. And in my opinion, it's clear that the financial play for Carmelo is to opt in. And so at that point, you're dealing with a two-year, $54 million contract. And of course, now could the Knicks conceivably buy him out after that? They could, but then Carmelo would have to agree to the terms. And if he didn't get to go to Houston this summer, he may not be that amenable in terms of working on a solution. And another thing is pointed out, even if they can't agree to terms on a buyout, then could the Knicks cut and stretch his salary? Yeah, they could cut him and stretch that salary over a few years, but then you're essentially having bits and pieces of Carmelo Anthony on your payroll for, you know, 3, 4, 5 years moving forward. So there's no easy answer for the Knicks. That two-year, $54 million deal, they have something to lose too, and that's important because a lot of Knicks fans seem to think they have more leverage than they actually do, saying, well, you know, they can just keep him if the offer is just Ryan Anderson or whatever is being offered on the table from a third or fourth team involving Ryan Anderson going to team three or team four. Well, in theory, they could, but I think it's highly unlikely that Carmelo Anthony opts out next summer. I think the reality is you've got Carmelo Anthony at 2 years, $54 million. He's also going to be on your books next summer. He's going to prevent you from doing things in free agency. Who knows how he meshes with the other players on the floor. I think it's especially an awkward fit in New York because at this point in his career, Carmelo should probably be playing the four, but that's difficult to do in New York because of the presence of Porzingis. So it's not even a great positional fit. Who knows what's happening off the court now in terms of relationships between Carmelo and the team. There's a lot of those negatives. And then in addition to that, you're not going to get cap relief at the end of the year because it makes no sense for Carmelo to do that. So that's one thing that I think Knicks fans are underselling. It's not just a matter of, well, you keep Carmelo and they're much better off. Because, yeah, 2 years, $54 million for a 33 and 34-year-old Carmelo, that's not a very good investment, especially for a team like the Knicks. So I think the idea that they don't have to trade him is getting a little bit overplayed. No, there are reasons they have something to lose, just from a cap perspective, by keeping him. Now, all that said, does it mean that they are better off with, say, Ryan Anderson at $60 million over 3 years than that? Not necessarily. And of course, I don't even think they'd be getting Ryan. I think the parameters are in place for them to get someone from a third or fourth team with Ryan Anderson going somewhere else. But the point is, it's not even just a matter of comparing the Carmelo salary to whatever salaries are coming in. You have to compare the gap there, and then also all the other things that come with keeping Carmelo. I'm not going to say that keeping Carmelo is clearly worse than Ryan Anderson or whoever the alternatives are. I understand you could argue that even at 2 years, $54 million, that maybe that's still preferable in some scenarios. But again, it's not just that. They're all the things on the court, because that's just looking at the salary, the limitations of having Carmelo at 2 years, $54 million. Then we factor in all the chemistry issues, having unhappy Carmelo around. And then the other scenario, I know no one has said this on the record yet other than my good friend Jay Sports up in New York, but I think it's pretty clear that at one point this summer, probably the Saturday of the Tim Hardaway Jr. signing, the Knicks did tell Carmelo Anthony that he would be dealt to Houston. Now, they didn't have terms on a deal at the time, but again, they told him there's a reason that Carmelo and all the players involved on both sides of this deal were so confident that it was going to get done. And it's not like the Rockets said players other than Ryan Anderson were on the market. The Knicks just assumed that a deal was going to get done. They told Carmelo they were going to do it. And now, of course, they're stepping back, trying to see if they can get more leverage, either get somebody to give up more assets, get Carmelo to expand his list, yada, yada. But the point is, if they promised Carmelo he was going to get to go to Houston, and then they go back on their word, folks, that can have some pretty significant repercussions down the line in terms of the Knicks' viability as a destination for top free agents. Because if Carmelo wants to push that story, Carmelo is one of the top 10 brands in the league. He's a very powerful guy with lots of friends in high places. He can absolutely bury the Knicks from a PR standpoint if he wants to. Now, that has not happened yet, because I don't think anyone wants to go on the record, not Carmelo, not anyone involved with the Rockets or any other team involved, because I think everyone understands that with close to 2 months left until training camp, there's still plenty of time for cooler heads to prevail. No one wants to go nuclear, so to speak, and accuse the Knicks of lying or all this other stuff, because if you do that, if somebody goes nuclear, then a lot of times what happens in these situations, the team that's being basically exploded on just gets stubborn, digs their heels in, and it makes a deal almost impossible to consummate. I think right now, most people think the deal is ultimately going to get done, and so everyone's just willing to kind of stay quiet and hope that cooler heads prevail. But if it does not, then you have an unhappy Carmelo Anthony, most likely, around your younger players. You can't really buy him out now, because 2 years, $54 million, that doesn't make much sense. And next summer, you have to get him to agree to a buyout, and then even if you cut him, even if all else fails, then you're still going to have that salary cap hit for quite a while going forward. So there's no easy financial solution to this situation. And then you look at all the off-court chemistry developments in terms of having him around your younger players. You've expressed a commitment to rebuilding. He doesn't really fit there. Then you factor in the stories Carmelo could potentially tell to the rest of the league in terms of burying New York as a potential destination for the next at least few years. There is a lot for New York to lose. And so even with all of that saying, could you mount an argument that Carmelo at 2 years, $54 million is better than Ryan Anderson at 3 years for 60? You could, but is the gap between those two big enough to where you would deal with all the other headaches that come with an unhappy Carmelo? The effects on the chemistry, effects on potential relationships around the league. Relationships around the league, by the way, are important. A lot of folks I've seen question that at first, saying, well, how much can teams really blackball the Knicks or whoever it may be? Yeah, that stuff matters. Why do you think the Rockets let Chandler Parsons out of his contract 3 years ago? That was a solid between Daryl Morey and Dan Fagan, Chandler's agent at the time. Not sure if he's still represented there. But yeah, guys like Daryl Morey, good GMs, their relationships with agents are very, very important. And that's something the Rockets, even if it comes to the short-term detriment of the team, they're willing to take a hit, the Parsons situation being the perfect example. even if it comes to the short-term detriment of the team, sometimes that's necessary for the bigger picture goal of keeping yourself as a destination franchise. And even the little thing, what we let off today with, which was the agreement between the Rockets and Demetrius Jackson to the two-way contract. I don't think you're seeing that many players sign the two-way contracts, but I think a big part of how the Rockets were able to do that is how well-regarded Daryl Morey is and the team is around the league. So, yes, this perception angle, it does matter. So when you're the Knicks and you're looking at this situation, and it's probably not comparing Carmelo to Ryan Anderson, because I highly doubt Ryan Anderson's going to New York. It's probably comparing keeping Carmelo to whoever you're getting from the third or fourth teams in this deal. It's not just a matter of Carmelo versus the salaries that you're getting from that. It's a matter of, is the gap between Carmelo at 2 for 54, and yes, it is 2 for 54, versus whatever you're bringing in, is the gap so big that it dwarfs even the chemistry, the perception, all the off-court factors? In my opinion, it's really hard to see that, and that's why I ultimately see a deal getting done, because there's no scenario where the Knicks clearly win. If they keep Carmelo, I don't think he's coming off the books next summer, unless it's a perfect storm, something like LeBron James. He's going to opt in. 1 year, $28 million, that's the obvious play for a 34-year-old Carmelo in this environment. So I can see where the Knicks are frustrated. You can come up with a scenario where it makes sense for them to step back and look at all the options they might have and hope that over the next 2 months, maybe someone folds and kicks in an extra asset, or maybe Carmelo expands his list. It's worth a shot because you have time, you might as well use it. But at the end of the day, the Knicks, 2 years, $54 million for Carmelo, that's a lot. And whatever they're getting from other teams in this deal, I think it's probably better to get whatever they're getting in this hypothetical Rockets deal than keep Carmelo at 2 years, $54 million, and then deal with all the other consequences besides the salary. That's why I have a high degree of confidence this gets done, because whatever the gap is between Carmelo and whoever they're bringing in, it's small enough to where, by and large, it's still going to be in favor of the Knicks to get rid of him and just simply move on. So, with that said, I will wrap up this episode right there. Again, thanks as always to you guys for listening. Again, I'm your host, Ben Dubose. If you're not already following me on Twitter, please do @BenDubose. This is Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast coverage of the Houston Rockets. Follow us on Twitter @LockedOnRockets, or you can email us, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. Questions, suggestions, or inquiries about how to become a potential sponsor, just as our friends at SeatGeek were today. Remember, download that SeatGeek mobile app and use the promo code LONBA, and you can get $20 off of your first ticket purchase from SeatGeek. Once again, LONBA is the promo code. So I hope that you guys go out and enjoy the rest of your Saturday. The real headliner for the Rockets, they have agreed with Demetrius Jackson, former Celtic, former Notre Dame guard, on a two-way contract. So he's in the fold, and Carmelo, everything is still status quo for right now. So go out and enjoy your weekend. I'm not anticipating anything happening over the short term, but if and when we get new rumors, of course, I'll be here right here at Locked On Rockets to have you covered.